Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise Pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising today, sustainable growth through sensible franchising. Franchise today, sustainable growth through sensible franchising. Franchise today. Franchise today. Stan the Man, Paul Segretto.
This is Franchise Today. I just got to love the technical snafus as we learn new technology and adding our little jingle to the front of our show. As I said, I'm Paul Segretto. And my co-host Stan Friedman is not with us today. He is traveling back to Atlanta from Sin City, Las Vegas, where he spent the last few days at the Multi-Unit Franchising Conference, put on by our friends at the Franchise Update Media Group. And from what I understand and from what I've seen in social media, it was a tremendous event. I understand there was a lot of productivity, a lot of excitement, enthusiasm, and, of course, some of the after-hours fun posted on social media. One in particular I like, not actually fun at social media, but as it was going on, our good friend Brad Fishman from Fishman Public Relations got an opportunity to see a picture of him, curly fro and all, from way back when, I'm assuming sometime in the 70s or 80s. Nice picture, Brad. We all went through some type of phase of wild hair back at that time, and here we are, ultra conservatives to this day. So anyway, last week we had a phenomenal show. Our guest was none other than Jimmy John Liatu, of course, the founder of Jimmy John's Gourmet Sandwiches. And it was really quite an eye-opening interview and discussion. We really appreciate Jimmy John taking the time to spend time with us. And, of course, that show, as well as all shows on Franchise Today, are available on demand at blogtalkradio.com/franchisetoday and also on iTunes under Franchise Today. A lot of things going on, obviously, with the Multi-Unit Franchise Conference. There's, you know, always a bunch of buzz in the air. I heard Capriotti's really with their new investment ownership there was really one of the hits of the Multi-Unit show. And, you know, we've got the legal symposium coming up at the beginning of May, so we're still busy here in franchising. We'll be so probably into the month of June, a little bit of a summer kind of turn down a little bit, and then, of course, we'll pick it back up as an industry come September with the franchise events in Washington, Leadership and Development Conference. Following that, just a lot of great things going on. I want to remind everybody, if you're not yet a subscriber to IFA Smart Briefs, I would really suggest doing so. Some really great information about the goings-on in franchising. I don't have my buddy Stan with me today to banter back and forth on some things. So what I'm going to do, and probably because I am very excited to do so, is introduce today's guest. I read an interesting quote from our guest, David Nilsen, from Guidant Financial, who's the co-founder and CEO. And the quote was, "All aspiring entrepreneurs want to know the secret to success. The truth is, there's no scientific formula to ensure that a startup succeeds. However, there are lessons I've learned along my own entrepreneurial journey, starting and running my own business and investing in many entrepreneurs as an angel investor." And, of course, we look forward to hearing some of those tidbits today. David, welcome to Franchise Today.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I'm excited, too. I know it's real early in the great Northwest, and so I certainly appreciate you being on the show as well. It's certainly been a long time overdue, in my opinion, but I'm happy that we are here today. So why don't we do this? Let's take a look back. Let's journey back to as early in life as you'd like to, and give us some type of idea of David Nielsen, the person, and what led you to the point of being interested in, you know, business and in entrepreneurship.
Sure. Well, I think probably the thing that was fundamental to at least the way that I was raised and sort of the way that I think about life in general is my father was a business owner. I grew up in a family where, you know, my dad ran one of the largest fresh Christmas tree companies in the country. And so, you know, that sounds like you might work two or three months out of the year, but it was actually a very large business that he had purchased from previous owners. And so I saw both the blessings and the curses that come with owning and operating a business. But I was always fascinated by the work that he was doing, the people he's interacting with, the business travel that he got to go on. And so I spent a lot of time shadowing my father and asking him questions about what it's like to own a business. So I think that, you know, seeded early on for me the interest that I have or the passion that I have for small business and entrepreneurship in general.
The fresh Christmas tree business, it's interesting. You know, we hear about all these industry segments that, you know, nobody really thinks about, and yet they're out there. And so it's always interesting to hear about the different, you know, treks and foundations people have. Go on.
Well, I was just going to say it's just fascinating because the, you know, that particular industry, you're right. You know, you hear about these and you think, well, I certainly know what it looks like to run a Christmas tree farm, but it's different than that because when you're taking orders from these large retailers, you know, in Q1, and then, you know, you're planning for logistics for not only caring for the trees but actually delivering them at this crescendo at the end of the year, and then you have to worry about, you know, those things coming back. It's a major initiative. And so it was interesting because in our business, we're service-based, right? So we're constantly serving our customer in similar ways throughout the entire year, whereas, you know, in this particular industry, they were working all year for this moment in time, as many people do in the retail or relatable industries. So, yeah, so it's fascinating to go through that process with him. And I think that, you know, coming out of that, not only did I gain passion for small business, but, you know, when I was coming out of school, it was the mid-90s. It was the height of the internet boom. The stock market was going like gangbusters. And I learned about investing in the stock market at an early age. And so I fell in love with this, you know, business and also personal finance. Got quite an education because of the passions I developed there. And that led me into real estate in the early 2000s, and that's where I realized that there was a major liquidity crisis for anyone who was trying to operate a new or newly created or acquired business. So that was sort of the inkling there. I started developing real estate in this place called Belfair, which is on the peninsula of Washington State, because they had reactivated the Navy base there due to the war on terror. And as fast as I could buy up raw land and develop that for manufactured home dealers, I could sell those properties. And I wanted to go further, faster, but capital was tough to come by. And so it was that experience that sort of shifted me into the business that we have today, which is helping entrepreneurs to access capital all over the country for newly created or acquired businesses.
Right. And I would say that Guardian Financial Group certainly has done a great job at that. I think you probably helped secure a number with a few zeros after it last year. Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, I mean, in aggregate, you know, we started this thing in 2003. We've helped more than 14,000 entrepreneurs in all 50 states and really from all walks of life to secure $4 billion for investments or loans into small business and franchise concepts. Last year, we put over $400 million to work. So if you were to compare that, and I know it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but if you were to compare that to the top 7A SBA lenders in the country, we would have ranked number 5 in terms of the number of transactions, over 2,200 entrepreneurs or franchisees that were funded, and number 7 in terms of overall capital. So really proud of the process that we've put in place to make it easier for these, you know, newer business owners to find the capital they think that they need to buy or build their businesses.
And of course, we're talking about Guidant Financial Group. And most people that think about, you know, small business loans immediately go towards SBA loans. But I know Guidant does a lot more than that. Why don't you give us a little bit of insight into, you know, who Guidant is for and the different services that it might provide?
Yeah. Well, when we first launched the business, you know, our primary focus was helping people invest their retirement assets into a small business or franchise through the Rollovers for Business Startups program. So that is what we're best known for, especially within the franchising community, because those transactions are very well matched for investment ranges under $500,000, so a good portion of franchising. But over time, what we found is that the financing industry in general is highly fragmented. And the way that the industry used to deal with financing actually increased fear, elongated time frames. And so what we've done is we sort of pioneered this concept in 2006 of bringing additional financing strategies under one house. And so we are not only doing rollovers for business startups, but we help these franchisees to secure SBA loans, portfolio loans, working capital if they need that, and then if unsecured loans, among other options. So we've tried to make it easy for people to identify, evaluate, and then finally deploy the capital that they need without having to talk to a tremendous amount of service providers at one time.
So obviously, as I said, you know, a lot of people think about, you know, small business loans. They don't, the general public doesn't have an understanding, I would think, about 401k rollovers or the different ways that they can access capital. From that standpoint, how do you get that message out to them? Because what always really befuddles me is that people have a dream and immediately they feel like, well, there's no way I could do it. So they stop and look, and maybe look in a different direction or maybe just stop looking at it at all. How do they go ahead and educate themselves on this? How do they find out what is actually out there? And, of course, I know they can go directly now to guidancefinancial.com, and a lot of the information is there. But out in the open waters, so to speak, how do we get past that initial it's almost a phobia. That if it's not something that's black and white, they look in a different direction.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot there, so let me try and see if I can peel that back. I mean, the first thing that I would say is that I think the industry has matured significantly since we first entered. When I first started Guidant Financial with my partner Jeremy Ames, I think, you know, at that time, very few people, even in franchising, really understood the power of that strategy. Well, I liken it to home equity lines of credit. Once a well-known franchise professional shared with me that when she first entered the franchising industry in the early 90s, a lot of people were starting to use their home equity line of credit to purchase a franchise. Mm-hmm. And at the time, people thought, well, you're nuts. Why would you ever use your home for this? And then over the course of a decade, it became one of the primary ways that people were doing it. It just took a while for the market to understand the benefits of utilizing that type of capital. And I think the same thing has happened here. We've, you know, certainly done a lot in terms of partnering with the IFA and providing educational material to, you know, the internet, for lack of a better term, and partnered with many franchisors and franchise brokers and consulting organizations to, you know, really educate the masses on it. So I think we've come a long way, and now, as I, you know, I see it in terms of transactions where the total capital necessary is under $500,000, ROBS plays an integral part in helping franchisees go into business for themselves.
And, of course, you know, lending to that influx of information, you and Jeff Levy, another friend of Franchise Today and mine, a coach with the Entrepreneur Source, you know, wrote a book called Making the Jump into Small Business Ownership. I have the second edition. I'm not sure if there's a third edition yet. But I was real interesting, you know, as I read back over this, and I've probably read this book six or seven times because I do think, and it's not just because you're on the show, it is one of the best, most concise books for somebody that is entertaining the jump into small business ownership, whether it be as a mom and pop independent or in franchising or whatever the case might be. And I love the opening dedication to it. And it says, we dedicate this book to those who had the courage to make the jump into small business ownership. Entrepreneurs solve the world's greatest challenges, stimulate the economy, create jobs, and preserve the qualities that have made the United States the greatest country on earth. And, of course, when the book was published, was right in the middle of what I like to call the great financial debacle of 2008 to 2012. So give us an idea of some of the motivation behind this. And also, as our listeners also know, Mr. Jeff Levy, give us some insight into how the two of you cross paths.
Sure. Well, let me start with where I met Jeff Levy. Jeff Levy is a franchise professional that helps match would-be entrepreneurs with franchise concepts and helps them, you know, go through that discovery process and making the decision on whether to become a franchisee or not. And someone that has collaborated with us on many clients over the course of, you know, the last 10 years or so. And because of his geographic proximity and because he's such a great guy, we've become, you know, friends and someone that I enjoy talking to about business and franchising. Well, you know, you're right. You know, we published the book right around the time that the economic crisis was, you know, we were starting to come, at least we had hit the bottom and we're starting to bounce off of that bottom. And we were getting a lot of inquiries from people at that time. As you know, unemployment was high. A lot of people were coming to us saying, hey, I'm thinking about this as another alternative. What book would you recommend for understanding what it might take to open a business? And, you know, it's funny because at the time there really wasn't anything out there. There's lots of books on how to manage a business, how to motivate employees, how to communicate better, write presentations. But there was nothing that really spoke to if you're thinking about making that jump. If you're contemplating that, here's what you should be aware of so that you go in eyes wide open. And I would pause and just say this is sort of a philosophy that I have in general, and I think it's one of the sort of strategic benefits that our company provides to those that are looking to buy a franchise. We believe in transparency and education. We want people to be really well informed before they step forward with an SBA loan or ROBS or working capital or whatever that financing strategy might be, so that they understand both the benefits and some of the drawbacks. So there's no surprises. I think at the end of the day, one of the greatest ways that an entrepreneur, I think one of the greatest benefits for an entrepreneur is to not be caught off guard from the get-go. And so, you know, looking at the marketplace, hearing so many people wanting this information, I thought, you know, if it's not available, why don't we just provide it? And I appreciate the fact that you thought that that it was clear and concise, because I am someone who really cares about getting to the point, and I really want the meat and potatoes, not just all the excess. So we tried to write something that was a simple read, was good information, and would arm people adequately to determine whether or not they move forward. And I'll tell you, the best compliment that I ever received was a gentleman who actually read this after he had started his business. And not a client of ours, but just someone that I know through affiliation. And that individual told me that if they had read this book beforehand, they probably wouldn't have gone into business, because they didn't realize from the get-go what that would mean. And it's not that we want to stop people from going into business, but we want people to be well-informed.
You know, the thing I really loved about the book, and I remember Jeff sent this to me, oh, God, it's got to be 5-6 years ago. And what I liked about it was its concise nature, to the point. I like it from the standpoint that it's simple enough and concise enough that I refer to it time and time again, as opposed to, you know, some big textbook looking you know, type of publication. And I find that it's easy to use. I would highly recommend it to not only anybody looking to start a business or go into business for themselves, but even the ones that have gone into business. And even if they're very successful, there's really some great points in there. And I see definitely where it's beneficial, certainly, to today's people. I think a little bit of it might have been directed more towards, you know, career transitions, which, of course, was the big thing in 2008 to 2012. But, of course, we're starting to see more you know, candidate targets nowadays trying to get into business for a slightly different reason, but I think it still all applies. And,
yeah.
you know, one of the things I want to mention about Guidant Financial that I really admire that you've done from the standpoint of putting out information, Guidant seems to really have latched on to the digital space, the content that's out there, not only Guidant itself, but you individually. And I've seen, you know, articles from you in entrepreneur.com, Fortune, and a host of different sites. And, of course, if you go to Guidant Financial, you see just a plethora of information that constantly comes out of there. When was the decision made that that was the direction that Guidant should go in sharing that type of information?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's, in terms of how we secure our customers, franchising is a big part of that, right? We partner with franchisors and brokers and consultants to help their candidates find financing. But there is a significant number of people, even outside of franchising, who are thinking about making that jump. They're sitting in a cubicle or in an office, and they've got that itch, and they need to scratch it. And we wanted to make sure that there was good, credible information available to the market. Sort of, as I shared earlier, it's part of our education and transparency being core values of our organization, and wanting to make sure that there's good information, not just information that pushes people to our company, but arms them with the information that they need to make a good decision for them, their families, their businesses. So I think, you know, early on, we decided that we wanted to educate the consumer directly. So the content and information that we started publishing goes back all the way to the day we started the business. In fact, it's funny, partnering with franchising organizations and other groups didn't really come about until 2005. We initially started the business in 2003 and went straight to the consumer, to the business owner, and later developed those channels.
You know, one of the things that especially stood out to me when I opened the book for the first time, and I bring this up, you know, not to take away from Guidant, but more to look at this objectively, you know, from the book. What I really liked was, you know, the question, are you an entrepreneur? And then, of course, it went into the general characteristics of an entrepreneur. Because as we know, for many, many years, you know, being an entrepreneur wasn't always looked at in the, in my opinion, in the right light. A lot of people looked at entrepreneurs almost, you know, down their nose and said, you know, almost like saying they were a renegade, doing something on their own, a maverick, so to speak. And, of course, Sir Richard Branson probably epitomized that, especially earlier in his career. But, of course, a lot has changed, you know, since then. And entrepreneurship, it's hard to look any place in business nowadays without seeing the word entrepreneur. So with that in mind, I want to ask you a direct question. What does entrepreneurship mean to you?
Yeah, great question. Wow. You know, I will agree with you that I think that the you know, the brand identity of the word entrepreneur has shifted over the years. I think of an entrepreneur as someone who is willing to challenge the status quo and uses small business ownership as a catalyst for that. So that's how I would define it. I don't think it's limited to just someone who starts a business from the ground up. I think franchisees can be entrepreneurial. I think people that buy businesses that already exist can be entrepreneurial. I think there are degrees, but again, I guess since you put me on the spot, I would say it's someone that's willing to challenge the status quo through small business ownership, and that's the best way that I can do it. I'm really excited about the work that we do with these people every single day. It's funny, you get to, you know, as you get to do in your work as well, hear about all these unique motivations and these different business opportunities and ideas that people are pursuing and trying to not only create value for their families, but also create unique value in their communities. It's very cool. So, like I said, I think a person can be entrepreneurial whether they own a business or not, and whether they're starting it, buying it, or utilizing an existing business model.
Yeah, and sorry, I don't usually like to put my guests on the spot like that, but I know the passion, and I was probably more interested from my own standpoint than maybe for the listening audience, because there's always been this debate, you know, especially, you know, our franchisees, entrepreneurs, and of course, I think you answered it perfectly. I think they can be entrepreneurial, and then of course there's some people that say, oh no, they're not entrepreneurs, they didn't start from them. And I said, how could you take, you know, a multi-unit operator like Aziz Hashim and say that he's not an entrepreneur? So it's really an interesting paradigm, and I think you answered it, you know, spot on, at least from my perspective as well. And entrepreneurship is obviously great. I mean, they're saying that 60% of the population will be entrepreneurial to an extent by the year 2020, which is really an astonishing fact. And it doesn't mean they're investing millions of dollars in a business. It might be freelancing. It might be as a sole practitioner or whatever the case might be. So it definitely is mainstream. So tell us a little bit about go ahead. I'm sorry. You have something.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think that's the responsibility that you have and I have and anyone listening to this has, and that is, if 60% of the U.S. population is interested in owning a business or being entrepreneurial, then we've got to think about ways that we can reduce friction or the barriers for people to go into business for themselves, and that's certainly something that we're relentlessly pursuing here at Guidance, and I think the rest of the industry should be thinking about. There's a large pool of people that want that opportunity that just need to be led and helped through that process.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that. We definitely do have a responsibility. It's I know from my perspective, it's one of the reasons this labor of love called Franchise Today has been around now in 8 years. And
yeah.
I'm so excited that, you know, the last few years we've been, you know, averaging just over 200,000 on-demand listens a year, and we really don't promote it outside the franchise community. We want it to be a resource for people within franchising, people that are thinking about going into franchising, and certainly people that are interested in franchising their business. And I know it's with, you know, great pride when I hear from people that say, you know, I've been listening to your show for 3 years and it really taught me a lot, because that's what it's about and that's what this labor of love is. And I'm actually working on a new podcast that's going to be candidate focused, and obviously that's going to create some opportunities for you and Guidance as well, because I'll come back to you as a guest from that perspective. So but an individual today that hears about Guidant and decides to contact Guidant, what is the process? What can they expect? What would their journey be like, so to speak, with Guidant and the great people you have working for you?
Sure. Well, it certainly depends on how we first come in contact with that individual. Many, and I'll give some examples because we're talking primarily to the franchising world. Many of our franchising partners or franchisors where we help, you know, they partner with them to help their candidates find financing, utilize a pre-qualification tool that we've built that is customizable for a brand so that they can help their candidates do some early discovery. Back in 2007, 2008, we realized, you know, if you're going to shop for a home, you know, the first thing that the realtor is going to ask you to do is go get pre-qualified by a mortgage professional. But that discipline doesn't exist in small business and franchising. And so we built this pre-qualification tool that not only helps provide education and information to the individual, but it allows them to establish some confidence in their fundability from the early stages. So many of our franchisor partners would utilize that tool. Once that has happened, though, we certainly engage in an outbound campaign to try and connect with that customer. Our core values of transparency and education are really important. So our initial call with that candidate is around 30 to 45 minutes to understand a little bit about their background and their motivation. And then we'll spend some time with them in a follow-up call to educate them on not only the options that they have, but everything from, you know, the cost of capital to the time it would take to secure this capital, you know, anything in terms of fees, ongoing payments, things of that nature, so that, again, you know, they're going into this eyes wide open, and we work with them to help choose it. Now, our goal as an organization is not just to get the deal done, but it's really to get the deal done right. And that really takes a little bit of extra TLC and time with that individual to help them really understand what it is that they're about to take on. And from there, then we, assuming they've chosen to work with our organization, try to make it really easy for that individual by doing the heavy lifting, because we really want them to focus on opening their business. So, you know, if someone uses us for rollovers for business startups, you know, we do all of the initial setup on their behalf. There are a few small pieces that they have to be part of, but we try to do all that heavy lifting in terms of the annual administration. You know, we take care of the risk management and the business services, things of that nature, to help them go further, faster. If they take on our SBA packaging services, then we're working with them to make sure that they put their best foot forward with the bank. And I think that's one of the things that has made it easier for our customers to say yes, are two things. One is we've got these services in-house, and we're finding that there's a trend, especially in franchising, where there's more than one source of capital being utilized in a transaction. You know, years ago we saw, oh yeah, this person did all rollover, or this person just the SBA, but we're seeing a combination of multiple strategies being used at one time. And if they're working with different service providers, then the collaboration is not as tight, and thus the time frames extend, and sometimes the circumstances don't work out as expected. So, you know, we've made it really easy for people to say yes, because if we can't get their funding done, we give them all their money back. And at this point, 96% of the transactions that we're taking on are actually funding, which is a huge benefit over what you would see from large banks who decline 75%. Or 77% of the full SBA packages that they see, or small banks that are declining over 50%. So we're seeing really great results. And again, I think it's because we're investing so much up front to make sure that the candidate understands really where we're going and what they're taking on.
Very good. You're listening to Franchise Today. I'm Paul Segretto. My co-host Stan Friedman is traveling today back from the multi-unit franchising conference, and I'm speaking with David Nilsen, co-founder and CEO of Guidant Financial, and also co-author of Making the Jump into Small Business Ownership. Franchise Today is brought to you by FRM Solutions, offering best-in-class CRM and document management software designed specifically for franchising. FRM empowers real-time business intelligence, communication, and collaboration between all members of the franchisor's team and prospective candidates, as well as existing franchisees. This enables you to simply and seamlessly track, access, and manage all messages to and from prospective and existing franchisees, including text. Legal and compliance is simplified too, with FRM's document management, and even site visits can be digitally facilitated and scored with FRM. Make today the day you give FRM a look, and ensure that all of your candidate and franchisee correspondence, including text messages, are being permanently tracked and stored in candidate and franchisee records. It even provides state-of-the-art digital experience for your prospective franchisees, replacing old-style virtual brochures. No long-term contracts, multiple upgrades each year at no additional cost each year. No excuses, just solutions on the web at frmsolutions.com. Franchise Today is also brought to you by Franchise Foundry. We've been bringing emerging brands to market for more than 30 years. The Foundry fosters healthy, sustainable growth for their clients, that kind that comes from experience. The Franchise Foundry provides both coaching and consulting, a hybrid approach that delivers more effective solutions both to franchisors, corporate team, as well as for their franchisees. The Foundry team is rich in practical hands-on experience and expertise with general business management, operational and change management, digital marketing, and, of course, franchise recruitment and development. Plus, the Foundry team can also assist you with creating roadmaps for potential mergers and acquisitions and provide you with the guidance needed to navigate them. Learn more about the Foundry and our expanding list of clients at www.franchisefoundry.com. David, you made really some good points about the process, and especially as people come through, you know, franchising referrals and relationships that you have. What would be some of the potential warning signs that a candidate should be looking for in working with an organization such as your own?
Warning signs. So you mean as they're evaluating different, say, financing firms, what are some of the things that they should, you know, what are the things that would they should be looking for in terms of engaging with that firm?
Yeah, because I know there's a lot of different firms out there. I know I'm confident in all that I've seen. You know, Guidant is really careful about crossing the T's and dot the I's. But I think going back to what we discussed at the beginning of the program, there's so much unknown. What would be, you know, several of the warning signs that they should look at and immediately turn around and run and hopefully run directly to Guidant Financial?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I would start with sort of what we talked about earlier, is the financing firm really willing to invest some quality time with the individual before they take their money? I mean, I can tell you that from a franchising, from the franchising world's perspective, you know, 90% of the timeline is driven by the candidate's preparedness. So, you know, we believe from our standpoint, it actually helps us and it helps, you know, everyone involved in that transaction for that candidate to get a lot of information early in the process. So we spend a lot of time pre-flighting each deal. I think that would be the first thing. Are they willing to spend the proper amount of time? The other thing I would also caution is what I would call blanket statements. As you're well aware, like there are in a transaction where you're finding financing, there is the requirements in terms of providing or proving whether or not the business is a sustainable business, but they're also underwriting the individual themselves. And so I think, you know, there's no one-size-fits-all requirement, for lack of a better term. You know, you need both the transaction and the individual there. So I think I'd be careful about those sort of blanket statements and blanket programs and instead look for, you know, someone that's willing to invest that time early up front. And then the last thing I would just say is, you know, nobody really wants to be a guinea pig. You know, we've done 14,000 transactions across all 50 states and all types of investment bands or transactional sizes. I think when you're talking about deploying capital, whether it's your own through something like Rob's or through a bank or, you know, through the SBA program, I think you want to work with someone that really understands how to navigate those processes and can do it efficiently and effectively. And again, it's not just about getting the deal done fast. It's about getting the deal done right. So I would say that was it. I mean, at the end of the day, trust your gut. It was one of the best pieces of advice I was given to a given by a mentor early on was trust your gut. It seldom leads you wrong. And I would caution any professional, whether it's, you know, on the side of working with the franchisee or actually becoming a franchisee, to trust their gut.
Sure, absolutely. Very, very good advice. Why should an individual, a candidate, you know, look at a firm like yours as opposed to just going right down the street to their local bank that has the sign outside that says preferred SBA lender?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, the reality is that some can. And there are times where we've told candidates their best opportunity to get the funding is by doing just that. But what I can tell you is that, you know, earlier I shared the statistics. If you look at the data that's been released by Small Biz Trends, you know, if you go to a large bank, and I won't name them, but we all know the large banks, right? You go to a large bank and you submit a full SBA package, which that application is not a light exercise. But you go through that process and you submit to them, you have a 77% chance of getting declined. If you go to a smaller bank, you have a 52% chance of getting declined. So, you know, that right there is one reason why I would say working with a firm that has aggregated these types of financing strategies and also works with more than one bank gives you a greater chance of succeeding. I shared with you earlier, you know, for us, we have a 96% funding rate. And that's something we're very proud of, and that's because when we take in a candidate, we're able to assess their financial capacity, obviously looking at the brand, and then reaching out to the lending partners that we have across the country to find one that wants to actually consume that loan in that geographic territory for that type of borrower. And sometimes it's like finding a needle in a haystack. Sometimes it's easier than not. But as you know, when you're opening up a franchise, you're trying to find employees, you're looking for real estate, you're buying inventory, you're learning the system. There's a lot of things that you have to think about and worry about and navigate. Our hope is to make that process a little bit easier for that franchisee by taking that heavy lifting off their plate and allowing them to focus on the things that are most important, and that is opening and then building that business.
So Aziz Hashim, the outgoing chairman, the past chairman of the IFA, and of course a tremendous entrepreneur and the one of the principals behind NRD Capital, was on our show last September. We were talking about emerging brands. We were talking that today there's roughly 4,400 franchise brands out there, with roughly 52% of them with under 20 units. And, of course, the majority of those being emerging brands, as Brand Data had shared information that one brand a day was basically entering franchising in a 2.5-year period of time, and they're looking and projecting that it'll be the same clip moving forward over the next 3 years. So it looks like emerging brands are here to stay. From an opinion standpoint, David, how much does a lender look at the maturity of the brand? And being we have a lot of people listening to our show that are in the category of emerging brands, the second part of the question is, what advice would you give them to make sure that their candidates have a better than average chance of coming across the finish line with some funding?
Yeah. Well, I'll give you some random thoughts on that. So first is, I want to just clarify before I go into answering that. My wife became a franchisee of a mid-stage, not emerging, but mid-stage brand. And part of the thinking behind that is she wanted a little bit more creative flexibility, wanted to be helpful in determining some of the kind of forward-looking best practices, and thought that there was a better opportunity inside of an emerging or less mature brand than not. So I say that because I want to share that from a personal standpoint, I think that there is opportunity found in both mature and emerging brands. From a financing standpoint, though, I would say that an emerging brand definitely will have some additional challenges in terms of the brand really amplifying a lender's appetite to consume that loan, because they're going to want to see more successful franchisees. They'll want to look across a larger portion of the system and see a broader set of sort of, you know, individual unit economics performing. That being said, at the end of the day, most of these lenders are still underwriting the individual borrower much more than they are the actual brand itself. The brand is an amplification. Yes, it does help, especially if the lender is familiar with the brand or has some successful franchisees that they've worked with in the past. But that is certainly not going to sway their decision to underwrite the transaction. At the end of the day, it's going to be based on their belief that this borrower has the ability to pay that back, and the business is one of the ways in which they would assess that. So I think, you know, going back to your question about an emerging brand, I think the emerging brands definitely benefit from aligning themselves with a financing company that can learn about their brand and will take the time to understand their brand and then work with their candidates in a creative way. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, the SBA is only one of many options that we have to help people find financing. And I say we, meaning the financing community. You know, there are lots of people that have retirement assets or portfolios of securities or great credit, but may not have, you know, the physical home as collateral, or they may, you know, have some liquidity challenges and they just need help doing that. So I think at the end of the day, I think an emerging brand benefits from aligning themselves with someone who's willing to learn their brand and gets better over time. You know, the thing I would say that a lot of emerging brands do is they get frustrated by financing, and so what they end up doing is just referring a candidate to four or five or more sources. That actually creates confusion, and it elongates the time frames. It adds more work to their potential franchisees. So I would say, you know, if I'm an emerging brand, I would narrow my focus, find a financing company that feels like it's aligned from a values perspective, and then really lean into trying to refine that process over time.
Very good advice. You know, I know, you know, because we work at Franchise Foundry with exclusively with emerging brands.
Yeah.
And I often tell the emerging brands, I said, you know, if you're fortunate to get a candidate through the process, and let's say it's SBA, and I said it's no different than somebody starting out and getting a credit card in order to build their credit. Make sure that payment is made every month. The same thing I tell them, make sure that franchisee succeeds. Make sure you're doing everything humanly possible. Of course, they should be doing that, but of course it's very critical for an emerging brand to have any type of blemishes. We certainly don't want a SBA default on franchisee number one. That would probably be a kiss of death right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's... Go ahead, sorry.
It's tough to, you know, get them to understand that. And because there's so many out there that tell these emerging brands, yeah, you know, we've got your documents ready, you can start selling franchises. And it always amazes me when I come in after the fact and some of the things I not only hear, but I read, you know, they take it seriously. And not just from the lending standpoint, but their entire systems and processes. We could do another three shows on that for sure.
I'll make one more comment, and then I think we can transition. You know, the last comment I'll make for an emerging brand is, you know, I talked earlier about investing in a partner, a financing partner that will qualify candidates early. You know, nobody, the franchisee, the franchisor, wants to be surprised at any point in the transaction. So the earlier they can get clarity on where those obstacles may be or what those options are and can be, I think is to everyone's benefit. So that's the final point.
Sure, absolutely. Definitely not. I know you recently wrote an article, I think it was in Fortune magazine, and I love the graphic of the guy with his head in the sand. We certainly don't want people's head in the sand. And I remember writing a similar article way back when, and I said, when you put your head in the sand, you're most vulnerable, and your ass at is sticking up for all the world to see and take advantage of. So I chuckled when I saw that that image. And you know, going back to that period in time, 2008 to 2012, and as we head down the stretch towards the end of the show, just like to get some of your opinion on what happened back then and what have we learned from it that will make us better today moving forward.
Yeah, great question. I mean, I think what you're seeing is a slight over-rotation from that period of time. I think back in 2008, we had lending practices that were very loose. We had an economy that was propping up a small business success, and as you know, that crumbled. And I think since that recovery, a couple things have happened that are to our benefit. And my hope is now that interest rates are starting to rise slightly, and that real estate values in the stock market have returned to those levels, that we'll see more credit made available. Right now, I do think that there's still a slight over rotation in terms of lenders' desire for collateral and coverage, but I think that you're seeing more prudent lending practices, and so the lenders are focused more on the viability of the candidate coupled with the type of business that they'll be operating. So, you know, I think the outlook is strong, and I will tell you that, you know, as this new administration has taken over, I'm certainly well aware that there's been some controversy around that, but at the end of the day, there are some thoughts and opinions that are being put forward that would be friendly from a tax standpoint, which would bolster small business interest and activity. So, you know, we'll still yet to be seen how that will all play out, but certainly going to be an interesting couple of years ahead of us.
Sure, absolutely. I remember having Daryl Johnson from principal CEO and founder of Frandata on the show. I want to say it was probably back around 2013. And the way he described his opinion of 2008 to 2012 was there was a lack of common sense. And I think that was, you know, might have been very, very spot on, especially coming right out of it, because when you look back at some of the circumstances surrounding, you know, loans and, of course, defaults, you had to shake your head and say, what were people thinking when they approved these loans, and what were people thinking when they were taking out, you know, 100%, 110% loans? And it was really an interesting, you know, conversation. You know,
well, you know, Daryl's an interesting guy, and he's a good friend, someone that I've known for a long time, and I would agree with him that there wasn't a lot of common sense. I say prudent lending practices.
No.
I don't think common sense is all that common. So we mm-hmm. are starting to see a shift, but it is meaning that lenders are scrutinizing these deals more than, you know, we had seen. And I think the franchising industry needs to embrace that is the new norm today. And that's why tackling financing early and often is going to be key for success on both sides.
Yeah, I agree. What I like seeing from my perspective working with candidates and franchisors alike is more and more lenders paying attention to the franchise disclosure document. I remember back when, and this is well before 2008, where a lender would basically look at you with cross eyes when you mentioned, you know, the disclosure document. They're like, I don't care about that. And it seems like they're a little bit more educated. But, you know, we've got a long way to go in educating people about franchising. And I know, you know, one of the incidents that I'll refer to happened right in your neck of the woods with the increased minimum wage in Seattle, where they basically said the minimum wage will increase at this point, but for franchise businesses, it'll increase a year before. And it was like, whoa, time out. You know, franchises, most, if not, you know, the vast majority are every much a mom-and-pop operation, like mom-and-pop on Main Street USA. And that goes back to, you know, the kind of the battle that gets better and better every year, or at least less and less every year with American Express and their whole small business Saturday, where 4 or 5 years ago, probably about 5 years ago now, I was recommending to our franchisors to tell their franchisees to enroll in the program and be a merchant in the program and be proud of it and promote it, until one of the franchisees came back a few weeks before Small Business Saturday, and I think it was the second Small Business Saturday because it hasn't been around all that long. And they said, well, you know, evidently you didn't read the very fine print in the agreement. And it said at the time, franchise is not allowed. Big, bold print. And I was just flabbergasted. Yep. Long story short, I tried reaching out, but of course, trying to reach somebody on the phone in a big organization like that is impossible. Trying to find, you know, who you need to speak with is impossible. So I did what, of course, I do probably best, which is I'll go to social media. And I started putting information out there, wrote blogs, and got interviewed by, you know, Inc. Magazine and a couple of the other, Wall Street Journal, a couple of the publications, and still nothing was changing. And we got to Thanksgiving 2 days before Small Business Saturday, and I went on social media hard and tried to get some type of response. And Friday, being Black Friday, I did the same thing and nothing. So Saturday morning, early, bright and early, I posted on Twitter that maybe franchising should stop taking the American Express card. And I got a Twitter message from a senior VP at American Express asking me to call her. And the long story short, David, was I met with 13 of their senior executives, some obviously very bright and educated people that had no clue what franchising was about. They pretty much unanimously believed that franchising was like McDonald's, and McDonald's paid for all the marketing for the franchisees, and the franchisees had no opportunity to fail, and it was only because of the strength of the finances that McDonald's put into the franchisees' business that made them succeed. And, whoa, time out. You are so way off base. And since then, I mean, I'm glad to say that franchising has been allowed in that program, and each year it seems like the number goes up and up of the number of units that a brand is allowed to have to be accepted into the program. But it amazes me, you know, so many people just don't understand what franchising is about.
Yep. Yeah, it's very true. I think we've got some work to do there. I think too many people are influenced by the top 10 franchising brands and don't recognize that there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of franchisees that struggle just the same as any small business owner. And we've got to continue to build some awareness around that and support them as we're trying to do today.
Well, I really appreciate you being our guest, my guest today on Franchise Today. Again, Stan really wanted to be on the air with us. I know the last 3 weeks he's been saying how much he looked forward to today's show. Again, I want to congratulate you openly on being a new pop-up, a new father. It's a great thrill, I know. And I love seeing the evolution, so to speak, on Facebook. It's tremendous. Again, thanks for being our guest today on Franchise Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, and look forward to seeing you soon.
You know, before I go, I was remiss. How can people find out more about Guiding Financial and you? How should they contact you?
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, you know, it's very simple to find us on the web. Our website is guidantfinancial.com. It's GUIDANTfinancial.com. Lots of great information available there. And if anyone listening to this podcast would like to have further conversation around how we might be able to support their brand or their pursuit of becoming a franchisee, we'd love to engage in that dialogue.
Thanks, David. Thanks again. So there you have it. Guiding Financial, David Nielsen, certainly guiding lights to small business credit. And we appreciate him being on the show today. Until next week, my name is Paul Segretto, wishing you the best, the very best, in this great, great thing we call franchising. And Franchise Today is out.
Franchise pros, Stan the Man, Paul Segretto, Badlands, baby. Franchising today, sustainable growth, the sensible franchising. Franchise today, sustainable growth.